I am not usually much of a pink person, but this stole was the first one that I ever made. There is a very long tradition of the third Sunday of Advent being represented by the color pink. See, once upon a time, when Latin was still a living language, and every Bible in existence had been lovingly written out by hand, word by word, long before Charlie Brown ever lamented that Christmas had become too commercial, the season of Advent was a season of somber fasting and reflection and penitence, like Lent was. After all, there was a reason why we needed God to take on human form and walk among us. And that reason was not so that we could throw ugly Christmas sweater parties and drink eggnog. We have always known that something in this world had to be changed, needs to be changed, can be changed. We have always known that something in ourselves needs to be changed. And the seasons of Advent and Lent were set aside to reflect on how we can make that happen. But that kind of deep introspection can be intense and draining and emotionally exhausting. And so we set one Sunday aside to be lightened, literally and figuratively. The violet purples of Advent are lightened down to rosy pink on the third Sunday of Advent, which was called Gaudete, the Latin for rejoice. Because even at the back of all our prayers and reflections and thoughts and lamentations, there is a joy that cannot be dulled or darkened, a joy that keeps us going. Joy is more than a form of happiness. Joy is the supporting chord beneath a melody, the confidence that the sun will rise, the trust that there is something good in the world, in the universe, in the heavens, somewhere. Joy is what nudges us to keep going when things are hard, reminding us what we're in it for, encouraging us not to give up. Sometimes the voice of joy is very faint, and if that is at all true for you this season, I would like to invite you to our longest night service this Saturday. Even the longest and darkest night of the year cannot last forever. As the great poet once wrote, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. By this point in the story, Scrooge's protective shell of bitterness certainly has a crack in it. His memories have broken through, from long ago, when there were people whom he loved. And now, the ghost of Christmas present has shown him that there are still people in his life whom he might love and help and form relationships with. After all, how could joy exist within a man who doesn't love anyone or anything but money? Joy is an embrace that pulls people together to accomplish things together. Joy is the bond between God and humankind. Joy is an invitation to take part in the world around you, knowing that it can change for the better. Joy can't thrive in the heart of someone who shuts the world out. But if Scrooge can look beyond his own selfish desires, if he can form connections, if he can walk alongside his neighbors, if he can learn to see the humanity in the people he once brushed off, there is still a chance for him. Joy is underneath everything, patiently holding you up. But sometimes, joy comes to the foreground and leaps. Our gospel story this morning comes to us from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 1, verses 39 through 45. In those days, Mary set out and went with haste to a Judean town in the hill country, where she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the child leapt in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit and exclaimed with a loud cry, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And why has this happened to me, that the mother of my Lord comes to me? For as soon as I heard the sound of your greeting, the child in my womb leapt for joy. And blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord." This is the word of the Lord. The joy of Mary and Elizabeth is built on their trust in God. It is built on their firm and abiding belief that God's words would be fulfilled. The joy of Mary and Elizabeth is built on their conviction that they are not alone. I've said before that this scene is, to me, the single most beautiful part of the Christmas story. Even with God literally growing inside her, Mary still seeks out the love and comfort of her cousin. Even with the words of the angel treasured in her heart, Mary knows that if her child is going to bring people together, she needs to allow that miracle to be worked. Mary understands whatever happiness she might treasure in her own heart, joy is shared with God, with others, with the world. Mary believes that the child she will raise will change the world as she knew it, for the better. And the confidence of that joy is what fuels her travel south to see Elizabeth. An angel comes to Mary, and the first thing she does is not to hide herself to keep the child safe, not to find a crown, not even to offer up a burnt sacrifice. The first thing she does is to share the good news. And that good news makes the world and Elizabeth's womb leap for joy. Matt Rawl, in his book, The Redemption of Scrooge, considers the joy in this scene to burst beyond the embrace of the two women. He writes, "The Gospels first mention joy when Mary and Elizabeth meet in Luke 1. Mary comes from the hill country in the north, the former kingdom of Israel, to visit Elizabeth in the south, the former kingdom of Judea. Now, this may not seem like a significant detail, but when reading the Gospel of Luke, you must always pay attention to the setting. The important detail is this: Mary from the north meets Elizabeth from the south, and the child in Elizabeth's womb leaps. Luke is showing how God, through the birth of Christ, is uniting the old kingdom that was once divided over power struggles and foreign conquest. A child from the north and a child from the south, indelibly linked by the good news of God. Through the birth of these two children, the kingdom is once again united, and the child leaps." If we fast forward to Luke 6, we see Jesus preaching to the people, and he tells them, "Blessed are you, though people hate you, reject you, insult you, and condemn your name as evil because of the human one. Rejoice when that happens. Leap for joy, because you have a great reward in heaven." Now remember Luke 1:41, when John leapt in Elizabeth's womb when Mary arrived carrying Jesus in hers. This kind of leaping is only recorded twice in the entire New Testament. Once, when the child leapt in her womb, and the second, when Jesus tells the crowd that they should leap for joy in the face of persecution, because great is their reward in heaven. The child leaps in the womb not only because it foreshadows John's own persecution at the hands of Herod, but leaping for joy is a prophetic act, symbolizing a gift from God that words just cannot describe. Wait a second, you might say. Do you mean that when we are hated and reviled, we should leap for joy? Yes, because death is no longer the end of the story. The gospel tells us to be joyful, no matter what, because joy is the faith that with Christ in the world among us, nothing will ever be the same, no matter how dark or how sad or how lonely the world may seem. We won't always be happy, because that isn't how the world works, and that isn't what joy means. No matter what we believe, we know that there will be hard times ahead. But joy is the knowledge that we are never alone, even in the midst of the worst times, because the Lord is come.